Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Cruz. Welcome to the LeadX Show, the smartest way to start your day. And I hope you'll remember at LeadX, we are democratizing leadership. We offer free leadership training, management development to anyone, anywhere, at any time. Visit our website, leadx.org, to check out our free course of the day. And today is part two of my conversation with U.S. Army Major Joe Byerly. Now, I discovered Major Byerly and his blog, which is fromthegreennotebook.com. I discovered his blog while I was doing research for my next leadership book, and I quickly became a fan. You can hear in this interview how much I'm, you know, thought partnering and geeking out on leadership with Major Byerly. Make sure you catch yesterday's part one of this interview if you haven't already. And if you have, enjoy the rest of our conversation. The other question that came up, again, from one of my chapters is about basically have no rules. And, you know, everything I'm talking about here and in my book, it's sort of extreme to start a conversation, right? And so I don't mean like we shouldn't have the kind of rules that like keep us alive and keep us safe, but I'm talking about the dumb rules, policies, procedures. And I should have pulled it up before this interview because I forget the exact article, but I did stumble on a study that was put out. It was a U.S. Army publication, one of your journals, where it was found that right now the training requirements in the Army exceed the amount of time there is to get them done. Like the requirements just cannot be met, but somehow miraculously everybody meets them. And it was two retired Army officers that did the study. And in their interviews, like the term that kept coming up was officers saying, well, we pencil wagged it, you know, and they were talking about like little white lies and ways that they got the e-learning tests passed or that, you know, equipment was certified or whatever. And so, you know, this is an area where, again, I think in the private sector, it's easier for me to say to some leader, some company, hey, you know, you should really throw out the rule book. You should be teaching people to make decisions based on values, you know, give people guardrails, not rules. But in the military, I mean, how does this resonate? It's like, look, you know, what we're doing here, you need rules to keep everyone alive and to protect our country. There's a reason why we have military discipline. Or is it to a point where it's not realistic and it's taking away these abilities to make decisions?
Well, I think from a military standpoint, one of the things that, you know, we've gone through, and I would argue the last 5-6 years, is a cultural mind shift. And what I mean by that is, you know, for a decade or so, you would show up to a unit, you would know that 12 months from now, I'm deploying to Afghanistan or Iraq, I'll be gone for 12 months, I'll come home, I'll do this ramp down, and then I'll ramp back up, and then I'll get ready for deployment again. So everything was very calendar-based. This is when, you know, we're going to war, and this is when we're coming home from war. Right. And I think that now that we are, you know, starting to look at, you know, the global landscape, we realize that we got to be ready to go to war at any time. And so right now across the Army, what you see is a reprioritizing of everybody's efforts to make sure that everything that we're doing is meeting that mission of readiness and making sure that everybody across the force is ready to fight tonight. And so I think that article kind of got after that, you know, you had a little bit of time at home and you had all these priorities. Well, right now, like I said, we're in the process of prioritizing those things. So I know that in several units, commanders have delegated that decision-making authority to what people have to do and what people can, you know, accept some risk and to mitigate by not doing that training. So you're not lying. So you're not pencil whipping it. And so I think that's a big thing, is where do those decision authorities rest at what level, and making sure that's very clear across the formation. And what I've seen since that article has been published last couple of years is that I think we've actually gotten a lot better at it. Everybody knows their mission now, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, it tends to change your focus, I guess.
It does. And then you start figuring out what meets this mission, what meets our objectives. And if it's not there, then, you know, either we don't do it and we say, hey, we're not doing it, Or, you know, we come up with some creative way, which I've seen a couple times, to where we still get after those objectives. We just do it differently than conventional means.
Right. So last kind of subject, again, based on like my book research, is on this whole topic of being an authentic leader. And, you know, I've spoken to some other friends in the military. There's a guy, he's former Navy SEAL. He's an entrepreneur now who he invented those suspension exercise bands, those TRX bands.
I love those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Randy Hetrick. And, you know, I asked him this same question. It's sort of like, okay, I'm all about being vulnerable and talking about my mistakes, my failures, and where the opportunities are going to be for our team, where the risks are. But then, like, I struggle with how much is TMI, you know, too much information. And, you know, if you're vulnerable to the point of like sharing your own fears and doubts, well, doesn't that go against trying to instill like confidence and this, you know, bright vision of the future? So what are your views about how can you be, well, should you be an authentic leader in the military, and where do you draw the line?
Well, this is my experience with the military. If you think about it, you know, if once you start understanding how the progression works within the officer ranks, typically we're in a job no more than 2 years, and then we move on to the next job. So when I first came in the military, I was in charge of 12 soldiers, and then I was in charge of 31 soldiers, and then I was in charge of 75 soldiers, and then 250, and then right now, you know, I've been in a job where I'm managing for somebody else, you know, 700 to 4,500 soldiers. And so what happens is, if you're moving up every 2 years, there is going to be a learning gap once you come into a position, and you're not going to have all the answers. And so some of the best leaders I've encountered have approached it just like that and have relied on the people around them. And what I found is being open, being honest, and being authentic kind of strengthens the team versus having people just have this image of the commander as the all-knowing entity within the organization. All of a sudden, everybody's pitching in together to help solve problems. And I know the leaders that I've worked for that have come into positions where they've been in for, you know, 17, 20 years and have been open and authentic with me, I try even harder to do my best for
right.
them, because I want them to succeed, because we do have that, you know, open, honest communication. The other thing too is, I think if a leader's open and honest about, hey, I don't know a lot, I want to learn, I think it sets the tone for the rest of the organization. And they can see, hey, if the colonel or the captain or the general, you know, it doesn't understand it, but is working really hard to, then why can't I do that same thing in my own area of influence? And so I think that's a great approach to have to an organization, especially one like the military, where you're continually moving up and you're continually having to face new experiences and new challenges. And it, you know, and that's the thing, is everybody knows that you don't have all the answers.
Right.
So to even come in with those false airs, I think ends up just setting a bad tone throughout the organization.
Any difference in your approach from, you know, when you're home versus when you're in theater, if you're, you know, leading troops in combat?
Yeah, I think that the pucker factor is a lot higher. And, you know, my first combat tour, I wanted to be the guy that had all the answers. And what I found that after a while, I had to rely on other people. And so that's kind of where I learned that first combat deployment is to rely, you know, to work with others to make the organization better instead of putting on those false airs. And then the second combat deployment I had, I leaned heavily on the strength of the entire organization. And what I found was that all the way from, you know, second lieutenant brand new in the Army to, you know, sergeant first class with about 10 years down to brand new private, everybody had buy-in to the organization and wanted us all to exceed as a team because it wasn't about me. It was about our company. And so I think that from those two experiences, I've tried to take that with me throughout my career. And I've never been disappointed, you know, with the results from that.
That's great. Now, Joe, I know you've listened to a couple episodes, so I like to end with sort of a challenge to our listeners. You know, I always want people to get just a little bit better every single day. So, I mean, we've covered a lot of ground, but is there one thing in particular that, you know, you can challenge us over the next 24 hours, like something we could do, something we can think about, you know, to become a little bit better as a leader?
Yeah, I would say read something that you normally wouldn't read. You know, in the military, a lot of times we have our own literature on leadership. We've got our own stories because we've got guys out there like Patton, Ulysses S. Grant. You know, we've got some great heroes to follow. But what I found was this: when I went to look into business literature on stuff, you know, listen to podcasts like yours, Kevin, that I found some really great lessons that I could bring back to my own organizations that have nothing to do with the private sector. So I would encourage listeners to, if they're in the private sector, to go grab a bit of military history and read about, you know, how guys like Ulysses S. Grant made tough, challenging decisions when he was up against the wall, or how Eisenhower would step away from the moment and just go somewhere and quietly reflect before making major decisions like the D-Day landings. You know, so that would be my one challenge to your listeners.
That is a great one. Of course, I believe, you know, leaders are readers, so reading is always a good recommendation. But then to read something like, if you're in private sector, read military. I just finished, I'm forgetting the exact title, but I stumbled on something about Nathaniel Greene from, you know, the Revolutionary War was Washington's top general. Like, I live in Philadelphia, so I'm right in the middle of the revolutionary history stuff. And it's like, sure, there's Washington stuff all over, but I don't know anything about Greene. And so I ended up reading about Greene and especially his revolutionary Southern campaign and how that helped to finish the Revolutionary War. So any listeners looking to start somewhere, look up Nathaniel Greene is a good one, too.
Another good one on that topic of Revolutionary War, I picked up a biography of Charles Lee. And what I found was a guy who became, sought out by the Sons of Liberty because he was somebody that was pushing back against the British establishment, fighting against the British military, even though he was a British officer. And then when they brought him into their own ranks, and as the situation changed and they needed him to be on their side, he was somebody that started pushing back. And as he moved up in the positions of senior leadership, he derailed himself because he failed to change his approach as the environment changed. So once again, I mean, there's just great lessons out there, when you pick up something that you wouldn't typically read.
I love that. I love that. Joe, this has been helpful on a lot of levels. I mean, this is a great gift of your time to our listeners and a great gift to me personally, as this is going to help me to refine my thinking and a second draft of this book. And I want to make sure I'm not going to take too much of your time in the future, but I'm going to let you know already, I'm going to be asking you back on the show so we can geek out on leadership some more.
Oh, that'd be great, Kevin. Like I said, I mean, I'm a longtime listener, first time guest, so I would love to jump in there and we could talk about a ton of other topics.
And give our listeners the URL for your blog one last time.
FromTheGreenNotebook.com. I'm also on Facebook at From the Green Notebook, and then I have my personal Twitter account at Jay Byerly. That's JBYERLY81. At JBarley81, and I'm always on Twitter. We've had a couple of great interactions on there recently.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm going to put all of that information, of course, in the show notes, and we'll spread the word on social media too. Joe, thanks so much for everything you're doing. Thanks for coming on to the LeadX Show.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate you having me.
Friends, before we go, remember, at LeadX, we're on a mission to give free leadership training and professional development to everyone, anywhere, at any time. Visit leadx.org, that is, to check out our course of the day, or visit leadx.org/Branson to download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership. And please take one quick minute, go to leadx.org/subscribe to subscribe and leave a rating for this podcast, the LeadX Leadership Show, leadx.org/subscribe. Until next time, remember, you have incredible influence on those around you, your family, your team at work, your community. We all need you to lead mindfully. How will you lead today?